All right, let's get into some foundational stuff now for those who are just listening or watching for the first time, have never heard of German New Medicine, or maybe confused about German New Medicine. This is a very basic question. What is German New Medicine?
So this is the discovery of the five biological laws by Dr. Reich Geerdhammer. And his story, I guess I can just repeat it again here because it is worth repeating. So in 1979, Dr. Hammer's two children went off on a trip to the Isle of Cavallo, and his son, there was this crazy situation with a crazy exiled crown prince of Italy, and he shot off a gun out at sea, and his son was sleeping on a boat, and he was shot, and the injury was very bad, and he was airlifted to the hospital and went through dozens of surgeries, had his leg amputated, and it was a very dramatic and political situation that he was involved in, because here we have the crown prince, and there's actually a documentary on Netflix called The King Who Never Was, that they don't speak favorably of Dr. Hammer and, you know, his later discoveries, but it does give you the context of the story and what happened, which, you know, kind of just fills in some of this context, because at first the prince said he did shoot the gun, and then later on he said that he didn't shoot the gun. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of drama surrounding that. And really what ended up happening is, yes, Dr. Hammer's son ended up dying, but it was because of the morphine, because he overheard eventually that the hospital and the royal family didn't want this young man to survive, because to have an injured, you know, crippled person as a result of something that the crown, you know, it was just too dramatic. And so, you know, Dr. Hammer, you know, his son was killed by morphine. And so that was absolutely devastating. You know, his son is so handsome when you see the pictures, and just imagine 17, just the beginning of this young man's life. And he died in his father's arms. And then in the months following that, Dr. Hammer discovers he had testicular cancer. And so he ended up having a surgery, and he, you know, but he, at the time, he had the inclination, there has to be a connection between what happened to me and, you know, between the loss of my son and this cancer. There's no cancer in my family. I've always been healthy. This seems directly connected to this circumstance. And so he went on to be the head of an oncology unit in Bavaria. And there he had access to a lot of cancer patients, where he started to ask questions about their story. So he started seeing this cancer in these patients, and he knew that there's a story behind this. And so he began asking them, did you have something shocking, something unexpected happen to you prior to this cancer? And in 100% of the cases, there was always a shock. But then very specifically, he noticed a pattern to the type of shock and the type of cancer. So the men with testicular cancer, so they may have had different life experiences, but the theme was a loss. They lost someone dear to them, a friend, a family member, a pet, a child. And every woman who had glandular breast cancer had a worry, a profound worry for someone in their nest, a child, a loved one. Everyone with lung cancer had some type of death fright shock. So this pattern started to emerge, and he's making these connections, and he's realizing this, there's a system here. There's a rhyme and a reason for the experience of the person, and then the changes to their tissues. You know, because like when you think about what is cancer, it's changes to tissues. Tissues are doing something. And then he thought, okay, so we've got the person having an experience. We've got tissues changing on the physical body. He said, I have to look in the brain, because the brain is the master control center of the system between the outside world and the inside world. And CT scans were new at the time. This was in 1981 when he began putting all these pieces together. And it was later in the 80s when, I think, because he came up with the first biological law. And I don't even know if he had done all the full brain scan studies at that time, but it was in the early 80s. And then he found that in the brain, in a very precise location, every time there was a conflict of a specific type, and a tissue change of a specific type, there was a circle in the brain at a specific location. Not just a few times, not 50%, not 75% of the time, 100% of the time. Every time there was a cancer on the body, there was always a circle in the brain at a specific location, and there was a specific experience that that individual went through that has certain criteria, which we'll go on to talk about. And so he said that when he had this realization, he went weak in the knees. He's like, am I discovering a system for how cancer forms and develops in the body? And that night he had a dream of his son. And so Dirk Hammer came to him in a dream. He said, geared. Yes, you're getting it, but there's more for you to discover. And so he went to, he studied more and more and more. He was so specific in his approach because this wasn't a percentage game. This wasn't statistics. So this many percent of the time there's an impact in the brain, you know, and that's how everything in conventional medicine, it's all about statistics. Or even when we say, oh, this, the percentage of people who eat this type of food, you know, that was a study that I, you know, used to cite back when I believed that things like nitrates in meat cause colon cancer, for example. And, you know, and I would tell the people, don't eat the nitrates in the meat because, you know, 67% of people. And the way that they do those studies are, you know, they just say, oh, have you had processed meat in the last year for the people that had the colon cancer? And then they'll make the statistic generalization and they'll say, oh, yes, the nitrates cause the cancer. But how come only 60% of the time? What about? And so this system is 100% of the time. It is a reliable system that always correlates psyche, brain, organ. That's the connection. The psyche is the experience, the conflict shock. The brain is the impact with the circle in the brain that indicates that a significant biological program has been running on that area. So that circle is called the Hammer focus. And then on the organ level, there is a correlated organ adaptation that is allowing the biology of the individual to survive. That is the theme of the biology. It's all about survival. It's all about how can we adapt to an unexpected circumstance in order to preserve life. Survival and reproduction is the game of life.
We'll talk about the brain scans more in a little bit. I'm interested to hear if there's any like modern iterations where people have done brain scans as well, like the CT scans with German New Medicine, because that's really compelling. Are you saying like legitimately 100% of the time these brain scans correlate? In Dr. Hammer's research?
Yes, in his research.
Wow.
And every person that we recommend to go have a CT scan, my dear friend just had a CT scan and got to see all the circles and all of the impacts. And it's telling the story of your life experience. Because just think, from the moment of your conception, your biology has been adapting to your life experience. And the very first system that forms once the embryo is developing is the nervous system, the brain and the spinal cord. And so from there, everything else develops out from there. And so we do have to look at embryology, at that origin, this looking at the origin, look at the beginning. What are all of these tissues built out of? What's their function and purpose? And that's the coolest thing. When you understand the biological code and you understand that every organ, every tissue in the body serves a function and a purpose. And when you understand what is the function of this organ, what does it do? What does your skin do? Your skin is communication. It's connection. You know, your mother, she touched your skin, right? Everything on the outside is covered in this ectoderm. And so it's about our communication and connection with other people. And so the theme of the conflict is going to be about connection or separation from your family, from your close loved ones, from the pack, from the tribe.
Wow. I mean, checks out in my book. What is a conflict shock? And then what are the three criteria that define a conflict shock?
Okay. So a conflict shock is not general stress, you know, and that's one of the pieces of confusion. And even, you know, in my old understanding, so before coming to understand and learn the five biological laws, I was of the stress adaptation model, you know, Hans Selye of that. Oh, when you're stressed, it creates breakdown to the immune system. And so when you're stressed out and you're overloaded, your immune system in that old model doesn't function properly. And so, you know, I had the idea that there's always cancer cells forming in the body and the immune system keeps it in check. But if you get too stressed out and you're too overwhelmed, then that system doesn't work. There's a breakdown in your body's ability to monitor and to clean up cancer, which is why we need to lower stress. So I thought that it was a stress thing. Now, Dr. Hammer's model and understanding and description is much more specific. So a conflict shock, also called the DHS, and he named this after his son, the Dirk Hammer syndrome. It is a shocking moment in time where you are caught off guard. Something was unexpected, unanticipated. You're caught on the wrong foot. It was highly acute and dramatic. It was a big deal for you. And you felt totally isolated in the moment. One of the ways I like to describe this is if you, you know, like the old computers where you do Control Alt Delete in order to bring up that menu, but you have to press Control Alt Delete all at the same time. You could press delete for other reasons. You could press control. You could press these buttons for other reasons. You know, so those would be different, maybe stress factors. But in order for it to turn on the biological program and to create the circle in the brain, the impact, the Hammer focus that turns on the adaptation cascade, you have to press all three at the same time, control, alt, delete. That is the highly acute, traumatic, unexpected, isolated. I'm totally alone in this. And so when I'm totally alone in this, the biology steps in to assist. And so that's what's happening. And so, and there is, you know, before you have a DHS, before you have experienced the conflict shock, there it's, you know, I call it, you know, like BCAD, there's before the conflict, you didn't relate to the world in the same way, right? And then after the DHS, then you see the world differently, right? And so we press, we turn on the biological program, it's activated. There is, and in that moment, your whole world changes, your psyche changes, and you have compulsive thinking. Now my psyche is assisting me because I need to resolve a conflict. How, well, my mom's saying crazy stuff about me. What's going on? You know, it's like, it's on your mind, right? You're coming back to it. You're angry about that thing. I can't digest that. Oh, it's just there. And it keeps coming back. And you know, you're in different times of the day, you're more on the track. Maybe you're finding I'm waking up 3 a.m. Why do I keep waking up with that thing on your mind? Your psyche's helping you because something's unresolved and your biology does. It is so intelligent. It is adapting to that circumstance. And all of these programs, they're archaic and ancient, you know, so the indigestible thing, the thing that I want to, you know, either the morsel I want to take in or that stuff I want to evacuate, that crap, that garbage, I want to get rid of this. Your digestive system is specialized. All of these tissues are specialized for certain purposes to better digest and take something in, to better eliminate, to better get this out of my body. And so at every moment, the body is monitoring and registering what's going on. What's going on? Is this conflict still active? Do we need to keep eroding this tissue? Do we need to keep widening this duct? Do we need to keep widening, you know, the bronchial mucosa so we can get in more because there's a threat in the territory? And so when you understand, oh, this is what the bronchial tubes do. This is what the pancreatic duct does. This is what the lining of the small intestine, this is what it does. It has a purpose. And then when you know the purpose, you look back at the conflict and then you know the story of the individual. You know the story of the animal. You know what they went through. And so that's why it is. It's almost like people are like, are you reading my mind? Like, how did you know that that happened to me? And it's just basic biology. It's the biological code and how it works.
When we talk about something like being an isolating incident where you feel isolated, can you describe that a little bit more to be a little bit more specific with that? Because I just want to hear what your take is on that.
Yeah, it's feeling all alone. Okay. I'm all alone with this. There's not someone sharing the burden of this with me. You know, so something, an example of like an isolating situation, you know, these terrible like pranks, like parents will play on their kids for social media and the child is absolutely alone, you know, because that if the child has their mother, and that's why, you know, separation from the mother is often where most of people's first conflicts come from, is separation from the mother and the, you know, in the birthing system, which is why birth is such a passion for me to share with mothers about, you know, what happens in those early days in the birth process. And then obvious things like, oh, sorry, I got to go back to work now. It's been 3 months and, you know, you're separated or you're at kindergarten. Your mom's not there. If your mom is there, that's where, if you get out of the isolation or if a child, their parents are fighting, who do I choose or who do I, I'm alone in this. And so it's that isolation that causes, you know, and that's actually the biggest factor of a conflict that we have an influence over is the isolation, is getting out of like isolation, talk to someone about it. That's what people do. They have this, you know, tendency to want to talk, but we want to, when you have the specificity of the biological conflict and seeking the solution, which we'll talk more about, what is a biological solution? How do you resolve these things? Getting out of the isolation is a huge, huge component of that.
Yeah. So like if the situation that is acute in nature, very shocking and isolating all happens, this may be a sort of nuanced question. What is the time frame for that to be considered an actual conflict shock?
It's like, at once. It's at, in the moment. It's all okay. At once, in the moment, those three factors and you're, and in that moment, and it goes again, past the conscious mind. You know, so it's not something that like, I thought about it, then I had the conflict. You had the conflict and then you thought about it. Because, and when you're thinking about the psyche, it's just, it's not the conscious mind. It's your whole beingness. It's life itself that is monitoring what is needed in this moment in order. I mean, all the time, your the part of you that is allowing all your digestive functions to take place, for respiration, for all, you know, for your body to change how much you're sweating based on the temperature, all of, you're not thinking about any of that. And so it's that non-conscious process of the automatic biology that is responding, that's going through and turning on the biological program. And then, yes, immediately after we're like, ooh, then we are thinking about it.
Got it. And you already mentioned this a little bit, like talking about tissue adaptation, things like this. And I think this is appropriate now to discuss what the five biological laws are and how that relates to what occurs, and maybe use an example of like a common conflict shock that people experience in modern times.
Certainly. So the first biological law is what we've been discussing, is the psyche-brain organ connection. And so the highly acute dramatic circumstance that catches us off guard, that's isolating, activates the biological program. Now, depending on the flavor of the experience, what is it that happened? Were you separated from someone? Did you feel attacked? Could you not digest something? Was there a big scare fright in your environment where you were scared speechless? What happened? So that determines the localization of the impact in the brain. So where that Hammer focus is going to be, and then which tissue is going to go through that adaptive change. And so a great example of this would be there, and you mentioned a funny story that your wife relayed about a Lego.
Yep. Could have been not very funny if he didn't succeed in it.
Well, so there's...
I got to share now like what that is, though.
I know, right? Sorry. Like Lego. So, my story is going to make it make sense, but yeah, go ahead and share it.
So very briefly, my wife calls me while I'm on the way here and said my son showed her a magic trick where he took a small Lego piece, swallowed it, and then blew it out of his nose. And she's like, all right, I'm glad you got it out. Never do that again. Do not ever do that again.
Well, this is a similar story about a mother and her, you know, 3-4-year-old child got really interested in coins. And every time that they would go on the subway or go somewhere and there were coins involved, mommy, can I have a coin? Mommy, can I have a coin? And so the mother would always, you know, give him a coin. And then they're, you know, sitting next to each other. And after, he goes, mommy, the coin is in my belly. And she, highly acute, dramatic, caught off guard, unexpected, isolating shock, where she's like, oh my gosh, she's thinking about the size of the coin. She's thinking about the size of his esophagus. Is it going to get stuck? And so that highly shocking moment, and we can have conflicts on behalf of other people. And so her biology turned on the program. So that was her shock moment. And so when you're in the shock, now this is going to describe the law of two phases. So every biological program, given that there's a resolution to the conflict, runs in two phases. And so the way that this works is we have, you know, the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic. So we have the day-night rhythm is our normal day-night rhythm. During the day, we're more conflict active, higher cortisol, more, you know, we're hunting, we're gathering, we're going out and doing things. And then at night, the normal day-night rhythm, we come into vagotonia. We are more relaxed, parasympathetic, rest and digest in the evening. Now, when you have the conflict, that rhythm shifts and you shift into heightened sympathicotonia. And so we have vasoconstriction, right? We are stressed. We are worried. We're compulsively thinking about this conflict. And so when the mother's like, oh my God, is it going to get stuck? Do we need to go into the doctors? Like, what do we need to do in order for my son to be okay? She's concerned about it. And so her biology perceived that as a morsel conflict. So there's this morsel that I want to eliminate. I want my son to get this morsel out of his body. And so this is the ancient, the oldest part of the brain is the brainstem, which controls the glandular tissues, like the sublingual glands, the salivary glands, the parotid glands. And so the right side is about getting the morsel in. The left side is about eliminating the morsel. So she started hypersalivating on her left side. She started like drooling. Because her body, and you know how the body can do this, is like if you think about a lemon, you know, the body already like prepares itself. You probably already have some extra saliva in your mouth, right? And so her biology turned on the program for hypersalivation on the left side to help, you know, the biology just perceived, oh, this is a dramatic thing. We need to eliminate this. So when she's in the conflict, concerned, is everything okay? Is he choking? Is he coughing? Do we need to do something? You know, her husband tries to calm her down. It's just, you know, just let's wait a little while. It's going to come out the other end. But the mother, she's in conflict. And so during the time when the conflict is unresolved, when we don't know if it's going to be okay, we stay in that sustained sympathicotonia. That is called the conflict active phase. I'm conflict active right now. My hands are cold. That's a great way. Start paying attention If you're listening, are your hands warm or cold right now? When you have a conflict, your hands go cold and your mind starts racing. You know, your heart rate is up. You're just kind of more attuned to what's going on because there's been a threat. There's been a threat. A threat to what? A threat to survival, right? And the most basic function within you says survive, right? It wants to survive. And so that's happening every moment until the resolution. So mom gets a resolution, coin comes out the other end. What a relief. Oh, there was no blockage. There's no reason for this extra saliva anymore. I don't need this. So the body, when the conflict was active, it has this ability to do things, to change tissues. It can do basically three things when you're in a conflict. There can be tissue proliferation, tissue growth. So we can grow the gland bigger. The salivary gland first can increase its production. So it's ramping up its production. And then it can grow in size. And one of the ways that I like to describe this is as a construction site. We had a wonderful workshop and my teaching, I like to do a little bit of, illustrative teaching. And I was wearing a construction vest and a construction hat. And I was like, listen, I want you guys to get that when you're having adaptations, your tissues at that localized site, they're doing something. There's a job. They have this survival function. Your body is like a transformer. You know, like the transformer can change shapes from one form into another. These tissues can change shapes. They can proliferate additional tissue to help you through this shocking, unexpected, isolating situation. And so the tissues grow during the conflict active phase. And then we have the sigh of relief. Oh my goodness. The stone has fallen from my soul. The coin is out. It is no longer potentially stuck. We no longer potentially have to go into the hospital. My child is no longer in danger. Okay, so we have conflict active, right? And then we have this resolution, this conflictolysis. This is when we go from concerned and worried and uncertain to, everything's going to be okay. Then the body has to shift gears. So what was built, right? If we built extra tissue during the conflict active phase, what does it make sense to do now? Okay, construction crew come in. We don't need this anymore. That was a temporary structure, temporary extra tissue. Now we're going to decompose that tissue. We're going to break it down. And the body uses the fourth biological law, which is the law of microbes. So these microbes, they are seasonal workers that hang out in standby. They're just there, right? They know this. They call it latent TB. It's there. They know that the tubercular bacteria or strep bacteria, if they swab someone's throat, there's strep bacteria in there. There's all sorts of different bacteria. But this person doesn't have any symptoms. If the bacteria cause the symptoms, what accounts for that? And what accounts for that is when you are in conflict active, the bacteria are not needed, right? The tissues of the body are going through some sort of transformation, tissue growth, tissue loss, or functional loss. And then during the healing phase or the restoration phase or the PCL, so post-conflictolysis A, so the first phase of healing, the tissues are going through a change. What was built must, what comes up must come down. What was eroded must be refilled. So depending on which tissue type, which we'll get to in the third biological law, each tissue behaves in a particular way depending on its particular function.
So it sounds like that German New Medicine, the five biological laws, aren't at all at odds with Bichamp and pleomorphism and microzyma.
Oh, not at all. No, because they're, and that I even with the pleomorphic, because the whatever microbe is necessary during the healing phase,
that's
your body can just whip it up.
Yeah, that's what will proliferate. Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, sorry, continue.
Yeah, so we have the conflict resolution, you know, so we'll take that example of the, you know, the glands, the sublingual gland or the salivary gland, which was producing extra saliva for the mother, built additional tissue. Now, during the healing phase, during this breakdown, the body doesn't need those extra cells. So certain bacteria are going to become active. And now she's going to have like a funky taste in her mouth, a funky breath odor, right? So anytime you have a funky odor on the body, that means some bacteria were doing a job, right? Extra tissue was proliferated and now those tissues are being decomposed using some helper. And those helper are bacteria.
Remind me again why the tissue specifically proliferates in that case. And I know in other cases, they don't always proliferate, right?
Yeah, so it depends on the type of tissue. So for the glandular tissue, everything in the gland, so we can kind of get into the third biological law here because it will help to just expand
on. That was all still number one.
No, this I've been sprinkling throughout. Okay. So we've got the first biological law is the shock and the localization of where we need the adaptation. The second biological law is the law of two phases. And so we're kind of processing through the conflict active phase, the resolution, now the healing phase. But in the healing phase, we have to talk about the fourth biological law, which is the law of microbes. Now, the third. So the third is the most expansive. And so this is the compass for understanding how each of these tissues function. So when the body is forming, so when the embryo is developing, the first differentiation of these tissues is into three layers. These are called germ layers. So germ, germination, the very start, the very beginning of the tissues. And so there is the endoderm, the mesoderm, and the ectoderm, the inner, the middle, and the outer. And the middle, the mesoderm, is split into two, the old mesoderm and then the new mesoderm. And so these tissue types are controlled from specific areas of the brain. So the oldest tissue in the body, controlled from the oldest area of the brain, is the brainstem. And so you want to think about the most basic possible organism when it comes to these endodermal tissues. The most basic possible organism, just floating in the ocean, right? It takes in nutrients, it processes nutrients, it expels nutrients, right? So it consumes food and it eliminates food. It has some type of respiration and it has some type of reproduction. It doesn't have to, defend itself. It doesn't have to have hierarchy, right? It's not having relationships. It's just a tube that's processing stuff. So inside of every person is a tube that's just processing stuff, right? And so the tube of the mouth, and it goes all the way through to the other end. Basically, you're a walking tube, as Alan Watts once talked about.
Do you know who Mike Cardamone is?
No.
Oh my gosh. I had an episode with him and he's like, human beings are just bags of tubes. It's like, that's a good way to put it, I guess.
Yeah. But so these tubes, the tube is specialized. Yeah. This tube is specialized to digest and to process. And also all of, it's so beautifully woven together. It's absolutely mind-boggling. One of the things I did this past summer was I did a 10-day dissection course, human dissection course, which I did back when I was in chiropractic school. But back then I didn't have this model. And so I was like, oh, I want to explore the inner world. I want to go into the tissues, knowing this now, and just to see these precious bodies, these precious tissues, the life that formed the tissues has now exited. But now we have this really incredible teacher where we can just look at all the specialization, because each texture, each fabric that the body is built out of, it's different. And now that I knew, ooh, this is the endodermal tissue that digests. So even in your ears, there is endodermal tissue. In your eyes, each part has different forms and functions of how we are, digesting the world, right? We have the light morsel, the air morsel, the sound morsel, the food morsel. So these are all the yellow group tissues. These are the ones that proliferate during the active conflict. So they grow and they produce more juices, or they better help you to absorb something. So that's the thing. If you put, that banana bread in the palm of your hand, is it going to get into your body to nourish you?
No.
Well, no, because it's not the right tissue. This is ectodermal tissue. Ectodermal tissue doesn't digest. But when you put it in the mouth, right, we have this endodermal tissue. We have this mucus, right? We have this saliva. We have all of these tubes that allow it to come in. And we have the absorptive capacity of the small intestines. And so these tissues proliferate additional tissue to make more juices. So that's why I love the example of the mom with the coin and the little boy and getting rid of the morsel. Or you could want the morsel. Oh, I really, often the tonsillitis, for example, this is an endodermal organ. And so it's like, I really want the cookie. I really don't want the broccoli, for example. I really want this new bike. I really want to get rid of my old bike. So we can have, the most primal morsel is the food morsel, but we can have a toy morsel of some, even examples of someone I want as this morsel. I want to take you in. And so, however your psyche, your ancient biology has perceived this situation, we can proliferate additional tissue. So in the mouth, it's about getting and in salivating, breaking down the morsel. But then as we go down the tube, as you described with things in the colon, right? The further down the digestive tract is the more we want to eliminate something. The top half of the digestive tract is about getting something in. Often For example, like with the pancreas, like the body of the pancreas, it's like an inheritance, something that you expected to get. You're like, I already digested that in my mind. I already thought that I had already decided. Dr. Hammer shares a story about a woman who had an uncle, her godfather was her uncle, and he promised her this chest. And she already like knew that he was going to pass away. So it wasn't shocking to her that her grandfather or her uncle rather passed away. But it was shocking to her that this chest that she already knew where she was going to put it in her house. Again, she'd already like digested it in her mind. It went to her sister. And so she ended up with pancreatic cancer. So this proliferation of additional pancreatic tissue, right? Because I didn't get the morsel I wanted. I need to better be able to break down and digest this. So each area of the colon, each area of the digestive tract has a different flavor of experience. And so, you know, so that's what's really cool, again, is that there's a specificity about why here and not there. You know, what's the flavor of how you felt in that moment regarding your conflict? And so that is the endodermal tissues, proliferation during the conflict active phase. Then during the healing phase, there's decomposition. That's when the bacteria become active. That's when, you know, most of the time for these conflicts, unless they go on for a really long time. So the example with the woman with hypersalivation, that would be an example of a conflict active symptom. There's more saliva right now because that's what I need to resolve my conflict. And then once I resolve it, now I've got, ooh, there's, you know, maybe some tenderness because that area is going to be swollen. The area of the brain and the area of the organ are going to be swollen during the healing phase because all healing happens in a fluid environment. Again, think back to the construction crew at that area. There's more fluid because there's stuff coming in and stuff coming out, right? If we're breaking something down, think again, like kind of zoom in.
Water is the transport medium for that.
So. Exactly. Like, yeah. You kind of like do the magic school bus. You kind of zoom, like, what would that look like? I really would love to, if anyone wants to help me produce like a GNM magic school bus TV show, please.
Actually, Mike Carmona, who I just brought up, might be the perfect guy for that.
And so, yeah. So now the body is using this, you know, we've got this fluid medium through which we're, you know, breaking down tissue. And so that's when you say, ooh, I've kind of got something and I've got this funky breath. And, you know, you might be a little more tired because, again, when you were in the conflict active phase, you were in a heightened, more energy state. And then when you shift into the healing phase, you're like, oh, I'm not feeling so good. Or I'm feeling, you know, this is when a person feels, quote, sick. You know, but when you understand, oh, there's a construction activity happening, taking place where my body is decomposing something that's no longer needed, you understand that that is, you know, you're going to be more vagotonic. You're going to be more relaxed. You're not going to have as much energy. Then halfway through the healing phase, there is a big squeeze. And so the big squeeze functions to squeeze that fluid, that edema out of the organ area and out of the brain area. And so this can be, you know, for the old brain. So for these endodermal tissues, you just kind of get cold again. You're like, oh, I'm like really kind of shivery and cold right now because you're back into that sympathetic active state for, you know, a brief period of time. And then you fall back into the vagotonic state for the PCLB. So the second phase of healing where there's more just continued. Again, you think about the construction crew. They're like, okay, main work has been done. We just have some, you know, finishing cleanup work to do. And then you're back to your normal day-night rhythm and you're back to your normal functioning how it's supposed to be. Right. And so that's like an example of like a single run of a conflict. Conflict active, resolution, healing phase A, epicrisis, healing phase B, back to normal. You know, now this mom, however, for example, she might have a track around coins, you know, until her child gets to a certain age where she feels confident that we're not going to swallow the Lego and, you know, put it out our nose, or we're not going to swallow the coin again. Right. So she could get a little nervous. So her brain is going to remember. That's where, you know, conflict tracks is the brain, this supercomputer is going to register when you press control alt delete, what is relevant to this story? The coin, the Lego, the, you know, if it was the time of year, there can be so many different things.
Or it
can
be like the kid saying, I feel something in my tummy.
Right. Absolutely. So all, you know, so the brain can flag. You know, so it flags certain things so that when that certain thing, now the next time, if it's the coin, if it's the Lego, whatever the track is, we don't have to meet all three criteria. We don't have to have a highly acute, dramatic, unexpected circumstance. And so that's another, you know, place where a person can say, well, I didn't have a shock, but I had the symptom. So it can't be that. It's like, well, the shock happened sometime in the past. And so, and then your brain registered this element, and now the element is present, you go, when you're, the element is present, you go back into the conflict. So again, it's, think about how much sense this makes. How wise is this of the body to say, oh, the last time you were dealing with a coin, you had a life-threatening circumstance where you needed more saliva. You know what? I'm just going, we're just going to go ahead and turn that program on because we're still concerned this might happen. That's a track. That's an allergy.